Okay. Good. So I've been listening to some of your past conversations. I didn't even know that you were talking about this stuff publicly already. Yeah, that's a twister.
Yeah, I was going to say that looks a lot like a twister.
There's rain on the ocean and there's like a... How do you call it? A water hose, basically?
Yeah, I think it's water, the water hose running over the water.
Yeah, so it's sucking up water so that it can rain down on us later.
I've always thought of like seeing those on land.
Yeah, but that looks wild. It's very, very far away, so it's very, very big, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
That looks really cool.
It's nuts.
Yeah, let me try to, maybe I can snap a picture that looks like something.
It definitely doesn't look like a cloud.
We can post it later. And it's transforming.
Looks like it's dying out now. It's going up off the water.
Yeah. Yeah, the weather is something I didn't factor into the equation of, you know, just taking developers for a walk and talking with them for an hour. I was like, oh, it's always going to be sunny and perfect. But we had hurricanes, basically, and rain, lots of rain. So I didn't think all of this through.
Just being outside in general.
But yeah, it's the first kind of conversation where I prepared a little bit. So I listened to some of your past conversations where you try to explain Nostr to the Podcasting 2.0 people.
That's probably good because I don't remember what I talked about at all of those conversations.
It was really enlightening in some sense because I've been so embedded on the Nostr side that I don't even think about it anymore in some sense, like how it is different from other things.
You get used to it fast.
Yeah, and we mentioned this yesterday, I think, very briefly, or was it 2 days ago? I think it was 2 days ago, where it's just like, okay, there's this a small little difference, but it actually makes a huge difference. It has a huge effect. And the small little difference is basically that the data is signed, and so that moves the power from the servers, which usually hold the power, to the key holders. And that's also why the stuff can be, you know, in 100 different places, because you have assurances that it's the same thing.
Yeah, it opens up a weird, it actually moves the data away from the service, which doesn't sound like much, but then like it lets you...
It sets the data free in some sense, right?
Yeah, which then brings up a really difficult question, a really interesting question, is do you need the service anymore? Which is like something we've never, like literally since the beginning, the internet's always been like
what's the point of the service in some sense? Because historically, because I still think we need services in some sense, and we still need servers. Like there was this whole discussion, like are relays still servers and those kind of things? And you were like, yeah, kind of, but also not in some sense.
I mean,
it was really
interesting.
It's
always convenient to run code faster on someone else's machine.
Yeah.
So like that's a service.
You will have specialization. A server is basically a specialized computer, and the relay is also a specialized computer.
Yeah, yeah.
But they are different in nature a little bit, and it all relates to cryptographic signatures and identities. It's like basically Pablo and I talked about this a lot, but in a kind of a different context, and the context is like you don't care. Like in the Nostr world, you don't have to care where the stuff comes from. And you mentioned this briefly as well, where it's like it can come from a USB stick. It doesn't matter. You know, it can come from. I don't care where the data comes from, as long as it like lands on my client or lands on my machine and I can check the signatures, then we're fine. Then I know I don't care about the source in some sense.
Yeah,
and it means the same thing. It's like you said, you know, like it sets the data. That's why you can set the data free. That's the mechanism that sets the data free in some sense. But yeah. you still need, like I mean we see this already. We still have relays still have centralizing effects, of course. Like there's it's still convenient to have stuff in one place for you know indexing and search
because,
and other things.
Really, indexing and search, but also just because like latency is a nice thing to have. Like low latency is a nice thing to have because if you have to wait, you know if we were synchronizing large amounts of events every week with it would be inconvenient to only get an update from people you follow like every week with all their notes.
Yeah, and we see the specialization in the relay world as well right now, right? I mean, we have different kinds of relays and so on. What's your take on all that? How do you think about this evolution where we have like, I mean, if you open Amethyst, you have like six different ways of setting a relay.
Yeah, the configuration page. I don't know anybody who actually understands that. Yeah, the specialized relay. I mean, it's the natural way of the natural way things are going to go, because you want to make like, everything. It starts out as a dumb relay, and then eventually you want to start. If nothing else, you want to start like categorizing the data, like putting stuff like the inbox and outbox relay is a good example of that. Like, what goes in the inbox relay is stuff that other people want me to care about, and what goes in my outbox relay is what I want them to see. So that's already like two specialized categories right there.
Another one would be your drafts, your private things, and so on.
I'm still not sold on that. I don't know about that. It's like the DMs. Like, it's everything under one key, and then it's a lot of... Because I'm kind of in the mindset of... I've been thinking recently, but like encryption and decryption functions in Nostr. And the signing functions by extension are kind of like the most expensive thing we have.
Mm-hmm.
And the payoff doesn't seem worth it in my mind to have a draft system where you're constantly doing an encryption and signing.
Yeah.
Just to like save something. When we have local storage, we have personal servers, we have, I'm just thinking about it in the context of like the remote signers, like trying to make remote signers actually viable. Or offline signers or hardware signers or anything like that.
The local storage, the issue with the local storage is it doesn't follow you around. So if I open a different device and I want to continue working on a draft, what do I do?
It depends on how you manage your local storage. Because like local storage can be something like the browser local storage, which, yeah, it doesn't follow you. Or like a documents folder that's synchronized with like iCloud.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you're a sync thing guy as well as an I. I mean, I could make this work, but you know, I think that's a big ask. It's like, do the synchronization yourself.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, to me, that's part of the magic of Nostr, that all this stuff follows you around. Like, and in the case of NIP60 and those kind of things, including your money and everything else, I think it is a very powerful thing to have, that you know you don't need to think about anything in some sense. You just log in with your Nostr identity and all the stuff is there. I think that that is a massive killer feature. I think every step towards destroying some of that is in some sense a step in the right in the wrong direction. That's how I see it, but maybe you know, like, I don't know.
The drafts are useful. Because I have used them, like the article drafts popping up on various devices, but they're not implemented in any good way right now. Like they're, I guess it's my complaint with a lot of existing Nostr implementations and features and clients is it's implemented in such a way that the user doesn't see it.
And so I mean, that's why you built Nostr.
Yeah, yeah. Like I can't trust the drafts because I can't see that it actually saved it. It just says I did something. And,
yeah. Okay.
And I don't know, did it do something and get to the relay? I can't trust the system yet. So.
You spoke about this in the past, kind of, you know, how UIs and systems in general, like, should never ever lie to you, and if they don't lie to you for a long time, that's what builds up the trust in the system in some sense. Is that part of it? Like, do you wanna, like, you're very adamant about showing the users what happens underneath the hood in some sense.
Yeah.
You think it's important for most users, or is it more a personal preference of yours, or how do you think about it?
I think it's necessary for all applications. It's just how you show it can change based on, you know, how you might say normie friendly or how slick you want the UI to look. But you know, I haven't been doing web development for very long, but the little I've learned so far, because I came from the applications I was working on before Nostr were like internal company applications for like managing like financial stuff, like internal company financial stuff. So it was like the auditors and the
dashboards and things.
Yeah, dashboards and stuff. People like looking to, like, you know, what do the customers owe us? What money do we owe them? Stuff like that. And so it kind of developed a way of, it's like, you never, even if you have to do another HTTP request, even if you do another API request, you never show cache data, you never show inaccurate data. And if it's stuck, you show something that's like, it's not, it's loading, it's taking long time.
Okay, okay.
Because the users would like, they're not technical users and they need to know what the, like, they trust the system entirely because it's their job to do that.
Yeah.
So if it ever showed like inaccurate data, then they're just going to look at that and they're not going to wait for the refresh.
Yeah, and it's going to be super expensive for the company because they're going to make a mistake because they work on outdated data, right?
Yeah.
Like it's going to be very expensive down the line. So you never want to be in this situation, basically.
Yeah.
It's interesting on the Nostra side as well because, you know, we have big clients to do caching, Primal. Which I, again, like I'm a Primal fan. Like, don't get me wrong. I think they're doing a lot of things right. But you land in these weird situations where just you move away from the Nostra native way of doing things and you just land in weird states and like sometimes posting takes forever for some reason because it goes through their servers and so on. And what I like about Nostra proper is like it's so insanely snappy. Like you are never in an outdated state in some sense, you know? Like you never have to wait in some sense. It's very immediate, you know? That's what I mean. It's very raw and immediate.
Well, that's the nice thing about it is like, because you can progressively load data. The events come in like a stream. So you can start showing the user things working immediately.
Yeah.
Instead of like in the traditional
sense.
It's
so awesome when you develop on it as well. It's like you...
It goes back to like just showing the user something's happening. Showing the users like the connection's working. There's data coming in. It's not complete yet, but it's coming in.
Yeah.
And that just builds more trust with users so that you don't have, because if it just sits there and loads forever and then eventually shows everything, the user for like the 5 seconds, however long it's taking to load, the user doesn't know if they're offline, is this thing actually working or not.
Yeah, exactly. It's it's actually the thing I do, whether if I want to check whether I'm online or not, like if my Wi-Fi is working and this stuff, I open my Nostra client and refresh it. I'll know immediately because it just you know, it's so immediate. It's the quickest way I know of, basically. Like everything else, I would have to, you know, like do a bogus search or something or whatever.
The funny thing too is like what we were talking about earlier is like getting used to it. How quickly you get used to it, because I've been building and using it for like a year, as most of us have, and it's like then you go back to some of the traditional social media. And it actually takes a long time for that stuff to load, even on like my fast connection. Like, I mean, whatever you think traditional, like Facebook, Reddit, Twitter, stuff like that. Like, it gets stuck loading, and you're just sitting there, and no data showing, and you don't know if it's online or not.
Yeah, it's.
Whereas in Nostra's.
I sometimes, you know, like venture out into the dark corners of the legacy internet as well, and what's so weird to me is that. You never know what it's really doing because it's like every time I refresh something, it's a new feed and the algorithm tries to, you know, shove something else down my throat. I'm really allergic to that now where it's just like, on the Nostra side, I know where I am. I know how it works. In some sense, how should I put it? I think it relates to what you said before. Like the system should be transparent and not lying to you. And if someone tries to shove something down your throat because they want to sell you something, both of these are not given. Like, they're not going to be very transparent.
Another lie, like with the algorithm changing the feed and all the social clients, is like another lie is like you remember a video you saw 5 minutes ago.
You can't
posted.
Find it again.
You can't find it. It's gone.
Yeah.
And it's like,
because you refreshed, or the thing refreshed automatically.
Yeah. It's like, did they actually post that? Yeah. And you just imagined it, or was it actually there? You can't find it.
Yeah.
And so it's those little things that build up where it's just.
Yeah, it's
the thing didn't
frustration.
Work. Well, it's the step before frustration. The step people don't notice. Like a good example of the step people don't notice is like you click on a button and it just takes 2 seconds to do before it changes state.
Mm.
Like it's not frustrating.
So you're not sure if you actually clicked it on.
Yeah, you're not sure. For those 2 seconds, like you're guessing yourself.
Yeah.
And it's not frustration. It's just something else.
Yeah.
And then
it's like lag. It's like lag in video games.
Yeah, exactly. It builds to frustration. Yeah. You have it a few times. It's like you can deal with it.
Yeah.
But if you keep lagging, it's like that's when you just rage quit.
Yeah. 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 No, I think all these ideas are super interesting. I use Nostra a lot for that reason. Like when I want to know kind of. I mean, it's to me, it's part client, part developer tool in some sense.
Yeah, yeah.
Like if I need to sign a raw event, it's very useful. If I really want to see what's happening under the hood, it's very useful. If I want to clean up some of my things, it's very useful. It's a very useful client in general. It has a very opinionated UI.
I put like hardly any work into that.
It's funny because I saw it grow over time. You know, like you add things and add things and add things.
Oh yeah.
And now it's like, it's the amethyst of web clients in some sense. No offense, you know, but it's a little big.
It is really a little big.
It can do anything now, basically.
Yeah, like that's I keep taking forever to make updates to it, but like, that's the next thing I'm trying to work on. And
what do you have in the pipeline on the Nostradle side? What do you want to build next?
Half the views either need to be removed or they need to be moved to a place that's easier to find. So a lot of like there's a lot of experimental stuff in there that doesn't work anymore and isn't useful.
How do you use it most often? Like, what's your main use case of the client that you build yourself?
The social sides, like the main timeline's useful. Reading through notifications, but then that view still sucks. Needs to be rebuilt.
You think so? Why? I think it's actually not terrible at all.
I don't think notifications work as a timeline in Nostr. Because when I want to know what I should care about, what people are tagging me on, what people are mentioning me on, I'm not looking for a timeline. I'm not looking for the order of things that happened. I'm looking for the people that tagged me, the context they tagged me in.
You kind of look for the most important stuff in some sense.
And I have to filter, I have to dig through a timeline. Like the order of the things came in doesn't really matter to me. Like, and also like the zaps and the reactions, like,
yeah,
I don't care what time those came in. I just care they came in.
Yeah. I like that it can be filtered. That's how I use it. So I filter it only to replies and quotes, mentions and those kind of things.
Maybe I'll like, now that I've gotten to vibe coding stuff, like I try to rebuild that cleaner next, make it, get the AI to suggest some like layouts. But my idea is to turn it into kind of a dashboard where it's like you have the inbox style still for like comments, replies, for people like replying to you or getting your attention. And then you have other dashboards for things like zaps and reactions and where the data is more summarized because that's what you want to see.
Yeah. No, I think that's right. I think that's right. I mean, I use a combination of all kinds of things. In Amethyst, they have I'm not even sure who built it. Maybe it was Vitor himself, but Amethyst has a bunch of contributors that just add stuff, and Vitor is just like, yeah, let's add it.
approve.
Auto ack. But they have a nice visualization of kind of they draw a graph for the last week of, you know, the saps and other reactions and so on, and that's really neat. I glance at it from time to time. It's quite useful. It's like, it's more useful than I thought it would be in some sense.
Well, that's what I want to get to. That's what I want to get to, because like, I found that like, if you're building dashboards, you can't put the graphs in first, because then you don't know what you're visualizing. Like, you got to put the data there, and I got to figure out how to massage the data into like a digestible format, and then you put the pretty graphs.
Yeah.
Because I want the pretty graphs. I want something that like shows me, even when like I click on a user, I want to see like a simple graph of like activity over time.
Yeah.
In the last week, so like, have they been active? When are they active? Stuff like that.
Yeah, I think you. But again, I think it's. I think you're onto something there, because the reason why I mentioned the notification tab of Nostradle, I like it, is because I have it set to, I think, what you want to build as the next iteration. I only have it set like if someone mentions me, if someone replies to me, if someone quotes something that I put out in the past and so on. Then that's all I filter for. So that's all I see. Yeah. So I hide all reactions. I hide all saps and so on and so forth.
Well, that's kind of what timelines
are for. It's kind of almost like a DM, but for public mentions. Like a DM, because I ignore all DMs. It's just like, it's beyond repair. My DMs are beyond repair. So I stopped looking a long time ago. But I like the... I'm a way bigger fan of public conversations than DMs in some sense, because most of the time when people reach out to me, I'm not even the best person to answer it.
Yeah, you just want to tag someone else into the conversation.
Just ask the question kind of publicly, because most of the time it's questions and stuff and so on. And it's not even private stuff. I mean, you know, like I do care about encrypted communication and private communication and so on for private stuff. But most of the things we are dealing with, like we are building in public anyway. Mm-hmm. We're also discussing in public. We're also, like, you know, I mean, we're having the conversation where things should go.
We're building a pro- we're working, we're using and living on a protocol that has almost no privacy.
So if you have a question for another person, just ask it and tag the person. And chances are either they will reply or someone else who is more qualified will reply. And both of those are great outcomes.
Yeah.
And if you just use DMs, then you block yourself up from the great outcomes.
What do you think about just removing DMs? Because I've been thinking about this for the last few weeks.
Yeah.
As I've been looking into like NIP 17 more finally. And
I mean, it relates to what you said about the draft. It's like it's very expensive operations. I'm not sure if DMs truly should live on Nostr in some sense. I guess they have their use.
Thinking is like, what if we just remove them and you go with I think what like Skype had at one point or other platforms have, where they had support for just like, here's my link to talk to me on this platform.
Yeah.
Here's my here's my Simplex link. Here's my Telegram link. Here's my Signal link. I mean, kind of promoting that more on the user profile.
No one stops Simplex and those kind of solutions to use Nostr as like a substrate for lookups and handshakes, basically.
That's true too.
And that's where I think that might just happen over time. I want to initiate a conversation with someone who is on Nostr, and I want to use this channel, and like the, you know, you can do the handshake this way. It's very much like the Bitcoin wallet's integrating Nostr lookups to send money to. It's like, I just need your Lightning address, basically. You know? And it's like, and it's very easy to look it up over Nostr. So you have like a send to address book and so on.
That might be the best solution for, because a lot of people use Simplex and then the Signal, and I mean, it always changes every single time one of them gets moved
or something.
But, you know, there's always one that a lot of people are using. And it wouldn't be very difficult to add like a simple link.
Yeah.
Contact information, basically.
Getting DMs right is really hard because people, like, one-on-one DMs are one thing. That's already hard. But people really love group chats, and getting group chats right is really, really hard. I mean, there's like five different people working on it on the Nostr side right now, and we'll see what kind of protocol, what kind of approach wins out. And the thing about the group chat part is that how private is a group chat really? Like, you have to differentiate between a group chat between three people, which is reasonably private, probably,
or
500 people, where there's the likelihood of being a mole in there or someone who just streams the whole chat to Twitch or takes screenshots every 5 minutes. It's like basically 100%.
It's going to get worse too in the future.
So why encrypt all the things? You know what I mean? It's like, why share secrets between 500 people and do all the fancy cryptography stuff that's like super, super, super expensive and hard to do if the group chat size is like 500 people? Like, it's don't assume privacy if you're talking in a room with 500 people.
Yeah, it's a weird... And the funny part is you wouldn't assume that if you were standing in a group of 500 people in the real world.
No.
You wouldn't assume that at all, but something about the technology hides that.
Yeah, no, especially, I think, if the engineering mindset wants to get it perfect, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, it's a complete waste of time. It's like, you might as well switch off encryption if the group chat is above, like, you know, 20 people or whatever. It's like, at a certain point, it's useless. You'll have some... You'll either have a mole or an asshole in there. It's like, and it doesn't matter. Like, someone's going to leak all the things.
Someone's just going to back it up, archive it.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's like... I mean, me and my friends, like, there's like three of us. We have a small Discord server from way back in the day. And I have all of the chats downloaded as text files stored somewhere.
Yeah.
Because I was planning on dumping them into some AI program.
With sync thing across like 15 different devices.
Yeah, so like, that's just three of us. And that data's already like stored forever.
Everywhere.
And going to be leaked at some point.
Yeah, probably.
So, yeah, it's kind of that point exactly. But
yeah, I don't know. It's a really hard question. It's like, what attracted me to Nostr and still does is because it's raw, it's immediate, and it's very, very simple. Mm-hmm. And to your point, you know, like being cryptographic operations being expensive and all those kind of things, having encrypted group chats on Nostr directly is not very simple anymore. Like, the simplicity stops.
Because you don't have consistent state, which is the first problem to get over.
Yeah.
And like public groups, the NIP29 kind of public groups.
And with Nostr proper, you never will have consistent state. That's kind of the thing to understand.
Yeah.
Like, if you actually use Nostr properly, how it was designed,
if you
cannot guarantee consistent state. You don't have a server that can guarantee consistent state.
If you agree on a server, you can negotiate like consistent state. But yeah, again, if you're trying to, there's very few situations where it makes sense to agree on a server, like on a relay.
Yeah, it's, but then again, it's like an anti-pattern, right? Like the beauty of Nostr and the simplicity comes from it, that there is no global and you don't have data consistency guarantees and all those kind of things. Like it strikes a different trade-off balance. And trying to shoehorn it into a use case where you need perfect data consistency is kind of an anti-pattern in the Nostr world.
There's one use case where I think it does make sense to like agree on a relay or a server or whatnot, and that is like community infrastructure.
Oh yeah, okay, like, fair enough.
Like a lot of what like Discord and
it's like Matrix, the self-hosted idea, basically.
Yes, yeah. Like what people use Matrix servers for now. Like they all agree on the same, and someone runs the server. The server's maintained. Server has features.
Yeah,
and
you
stuff
basically
like that.
You invite only, whitelist the people.
Yeah,
and
stuff
so,
like that. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. But in other cases, if I'm just talking to strangers on the internet, like it's impossible to.
We're in the process of figuring all it out. You just mentioned before that, you know, vibe coding is going to make the notification view of NoStrudel great again. So what's your experience been the last couple of weeks getting into the vibe coding world? Do you have high hopes for it? Like the opinions are very split online, whether it's useful or not, or like, you know, will we produce AI slop forever?
People have to argue online. I mean, it's going to work. I mean, that we suspected that from the beginning, and like I said, the last few weeks is a lot of good evidence that it definitely does work. Whether it's maintainable though, like that's an interesting question, because
I mean, there's a reason why Pablo loves it so much, right? He can just shit out an app and abandon it and not maintain it anymore. Now he can do it on steroids.
Well, that's the interesting part, is like, what is it? Because the code's definitely not maintainable. It produces, and if it keeps producing, it produces really, in the best of worlds, it produces code that is somewhat maintainable.
Yeah.
But does it really matter anymore if you can just regenerate some of the code? And if you go to more of a modular approach, and you can just
generate. Like Justin talks about this as well, like small specialized things, basically.
Yeah. It either pushes things in two directions, I see. It's like, it's small specialized things where like your UI components are built independently and plug in easy ways to your application logic, and stuff works in a very modular way. Or it kind of goes in the other way where it just embraces wholeheartedly like a framework that does everything, like Next.js. And it seems to do both of those really well, but the interesting thing is it doesn't produce maintainable code in either situation. Or what, you know, from the developer's opinion, perfect code. But then,
don't you think that's fixable with basically larger models and larger context windows?
Yeah, and then we'll just try to do more complicated things, and it's not fixable
anymore. Fair enough. Okay, that's the.
It's like building a
broader highway, and it will
it nails buttons now. Yeah. You want UI components, it can build you all the UI components.
Yeah.
But now we're trying to do more, and so it's a lot like Bitcoin and all the other emerging technologies where it never works. We never think it works because we're always looking at like what we're working on right now.
Yeah.
And if you turn around and look back, it works amazing.
Yeah.
For everything, it's already fixed.
No, that's the funny thing about humanity. Like, we only call the things technology that just don't work right yet. You know, like chairs. We stopped calling chairs technology, or doors. They're just
latches,
chairs and doors.
You know? All that stuff.
That just works.
It just works.
It's not technology anymore. But everything that's kind of half broken, or just, you know, fails sometimes, it's still technology.
that's an interesting point. That point, like, computers have been technology for
a long time.
Yeah.
I think it's because computers are not a static thing, right? It's like they're always evolving with us in some sense. Mm. Like, our modern computers are very different than, like, the, you know, big machines that filled up whole buildings in the 70s, you know? It's like,
that's true.
It's very, very different.
Yeah, they're not a machine anymore. It's something else.
Yeah, cars are kind of, you know, a car is a car, but
it's
still
not technology anymore.
Modern cars still are.
Tesla
is still technology.
Yeah, because it doesn't work well.
Yeah, exactly. It just breaks down sometimes. But yeah, a tractor, we don't think of a tractor as technology anymore.
It's a piece of equipment now.
Yeah, or like books. I mention books a lot, you know, where it's like books are absolutely technology. Books are human technology and are psychotechnology and so on. And we don't view books as technology, like, at all.
Yeah.
But we, like, there was a time where we didn't have books, you know, like, it's just... But just people forget. It's actually a human invention. But yeah, no, I mean, for me, some of this stuff just blew my mind. And to me, it's out of the question that it will accelerate things massively. Good and bad in some sense, like in the sense of, I think it will accelerate what we are building massively, but I think it will also accelerate what, I don't know, the WorldCoin people and the Skynet people are building, you know? Like it's just OpenAI and...
It'll take longer on their front, I think, because...
I mean, they have infinite money. That's the difference. We have limited money.
Yeah, but they have infinite money, but they have the problem of being greedy, which really inhibits their ability to work together. Like, the cooperation is almost non-existent
on their
fair.
Side. Oh, that's fair. It's competitive silos. It's not synergistic cooperation because we want to do
They'll get something working at some point, but it'll take them longer than we... like. It's taken them longer than some of us have expected to get CBDCs.
Yeah.
Because we knew they're coming. They are coming.
Oh, they are absolutely coming, yeah.
They can't work... Every government thing that's working on CBDCs is building it in a silo. They're not talking to each other. They're not even helping each other in some sense. And so it would have come sooner if they'd actually, like, somehow all agreed on one CBDC to use. Yeah.
By the way, I was like, oh, it's such a beautiful day. No wind, no rain. It's gonna be perfect, and now we're walking next to waterfalls and big waves, so it's noisy as fuck again. But that's fine. I just, you know, like, if I only want the people to listen that are able to suffer through the bad quality with us. That's kind of an entry point already, you know, like or a filter already. I only want the most interested people to listen.
That's kind of the same way I've taken with a lot of the podcasts. Now, I've gone through the usual cycle everyone does, which is...
It's probably smart if we turn around, I think.
Yeah, the fence is falling down,
We can do it, but just also it's going to get... It's not necessarily going to get better with the noise. So
it's
let's,
noisier.
Yeah. But yeah, it's a good filter to make things hard in some sense. Like again, for the cohort, for example, it's like you actually have to come to the island.
Yeah.
You have to, you know, like make time for it. You have to come here on your own dime. All those kind of things, and it filters out the slop a bit. It's like only people that really want to be here and want to work on this stuff are here. So I think it's similar on the Nosser side, right? Like, it's like you have to put in the work to actually use Nosser and understand Nosser in some sense. So it's very, we have some barrier to entry, and that's not necessarily always a bad thing, I think.
Yeah, unfortunately, like, you can never know, but it seems to filter out a lot of people who could thrive, like in Nosser and other stuff like that. But you can't know, because you have to have some sort of filter. Like, it's...
What kind of people are you thinking about?
Well, in the case, like, this, like, software engineering, like, coming to an island and all that, like, it definitely feels like people
true.
Who can't try.
But on the Nostra side, I mean.
Oh, the Nostra side. There's people who do a lot of interesting stuff in the world. Activists, people who publish things, artists, stuff like that, who just can't quite... They just don't quite know how to use it. They just can't put the time into using technology.
Yeah.
And a lot of those existing platforms, like, you know, Facebook, log in with your phone number, like, are low enough, like, it works for them, because whenever they forget their password, they just, like, reset it with their phone number.
What would be the main benefit for them, if you have them in mind? Because I saw you were following some artists and someone making sketches of hazelnuts or whatever.
Yeah, I'm trying to collect as many artists on those shows as I can, because, like, it's the most... I like looking at that stuff, selfishly. I want to see more pictures, just because I like zapping stuff. And
I think that's the main benefit, actually, of being there, that you can actually just straight up receive money very easily outright.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
And artists are usually getting screwed by all the platforms, especially the smaller ones. So we see this in the value for value music world, where people, you know, switch from Spotify to to, you know, receiving boosts and saps and streaming sets and so on, and they like 100x their revenue from like, you know, 1 cent a year to five bucks a week or something.
It's
a 1,000,000x their revenue.
I guess like that's kind of the way it feels on Nostr. It's been that for a while since we've got it running. It's just we know we have, like, there's proof that we have something here that works.
Yeah.
And then
it's still a small seedling, but it actually works.
Yeah. And the next hard part is just like what does it actually take to onboard people? What does it actually take to make this work? It's like with developing any application or building anything. It's like you can get half the thing done in a night.
Yeah.
In one good day of work. And then it takes 2-3 more weeks to get the other half finished.
Yeah, and the last 5% are the hardest part. Getting all the little details right and polishing it and fixing all the edge cases and so on. That's where the pain is.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if vibe coding can fix that yet. Pablo is trying.
It might be able to generate less bugs.
I think it's going to be a different set of bugs, right? It's like
it's
not going to make the same mistakes that human makes. That
it'll
humans
be interesting
make.
To see if it, like, because when you fix bugs, you don't generally write more code. And since it's an LLM and it outputs code, it will be interesting to see if it can fix bugs by not writing code.
Yeah.
Like rewriting it, basically, and keeping it working.
Yeah. Yeah, vibe coding agents, they are very good at maximizing the number of lines written metric. They're not very good. Like, not a single commit that was done by one of my agents was like removing code or restructuring code so that it's like less code.
That metric's extremely and productive.
In an actual, you know, software development team, those are the best commits, like something that yanks out like 10,000 lines. And
that's
it still
what I've been
all
doing.
Works
the like, same. That's been the last 2 months of work on NoStrudel is just removing code.
Yeah.
I think I've removed more, like 20% of the code base is gone now. Eventually, and whenever I release it, the next version will have significantly less code in it. But yeah, those are the best.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see how it develops. I'm quite optimistic about it because I think every single part of the whole thing will get better. Like, our understanding of where and when to use LLMs will get better. Mm-hmm. The models themselves will get better.
Oh, yeah.
The hardware will get better, which means the context windows will get bigger, all those kind of things. We'll have more specialized agents. I mean, that's what Pablo is currently focusing on. He's like building like Nostr experts, basically, that are
like the dynamic, like what Jesus was demoing and will.
Yeah,
dynamic
DVMCP stuff where it's just like you have a marketplace of, in some sense, a marketplace of agents, but more than that, like stuff that agents
tools,
can access easily and MCP tools that agents can use. And if you add, like, because it's all Nostr based, those things automatically have identity, reputation, Web of Trust, so you can kind
and
of filter
stuff like that,
filter out what is useful and what isn't, and you can actually. That's the coolest part. It's like you can give agents money so that they can pay their own stuff. That's like so amazing.
That's the coolest part about.
And to your point from before, that's something that OpenAI really can't do.
No, they can't because they won't. An OpenAI agent, if you're running an OpenAI agent on OpenAI's platform, it will never automatically, without authentication or anything, it will never automatically connect to a Google.
Yeah, they can't do it because they themselves have to take care of the KYC, of the vetting, of the what is allowed, what isn't, what is okay, what isn't, what is trusted, what isn't, and so on. And Nostr pushes all of that to the edges. Nostr doesn't have to do that. There is no Nostr CEO that has to do it. you as the developer, or you as the user, you have to figure out, okay, what are my trustworthy sources? What is my point of view, and so on. And it relates back to what we said in the beginning, where it's like the fact that you give users keys and the signing of the data moves the power to the edge of the network, to the users themselves. The key holders have the power, not the servers anymore.
Well,
the key holders.
The user's not on the server anymore.
Exactly.
Like they used.
Exactly.
That's why, that's like the terminal. I've been seeing this interesting, trying to rewrite, when I write Nostr apps, I'm trying to switch the verbiage, because There is no login button.
Exactly, exactly.
There's a sign in.
It's also not necessarily user accounts. I spoke about this in the past, I think with Pablo and some other people, but it's like, the thing about, to me, what I call them is like cryptographic identities, but that's a mouthful. But the difference between a regular kind of, you know, like a platform profile and a cryptographic identity is like, you can create a cryptographic identity anywhere. Like, you can lock yourself in a bathroom and flip a coin and you walk out with a cryptographic identity. So to your point, the identity, the profile, the username, it's not on a server. It's somewhere else. And that's what makes it so powerful. And to the agentic stuff, like and agents have identity too and need identity too and need reputation too and all those kind of things.
That's the thing they're missing. That's the thing they're missing on the existing.
That's why OpenAI can't do it.
Because they don't give their agents identities.
Yeah. And like every agent can have an NPUP, and with an NPUP, it also has a wallet.
But if they were doing it right in their own system, like, they would give each agent an email address, so it could sign up for services.
But then they're boxed in.
Yeah, then they're it's still which the same is, problem. But
which is not very useful.
But they haven't even realized that yet.
Oh yeah, I agree. And also most of the AI people haven't realized that they are gonna run into the problem of web of trust, reputation, which data to trust, payments and micropayments. All and you can't do micropayments on Stripe, you just can't. You have to build up your own credit lines
and so on. You need to sign in to activate your subscription.
Yeah, not only that, like, first of all, you need to KYC, but you can't do micropayments on credit rails. You can't. Just can't. It's not feasible. It's not economically feasible. Because I keep coming back to the same examples. That's why every single, like, New York Times subscription and so on is, like, you know, at least $5 a month. Because everything else is not economically feasible. You cannot settle, like, a fraction of a penny using Stripe, you know, like, or using any credit system.
Too much overhead.
You can't. You have credit risk. Yeah. You need to know the identities of the counterparties because credit can go bad and so on.
Yeah.
You can only do it with money proper, which means you can only, on the internet, you can only do it with Bitcoin. Bitcoin is the only money proper we have online. It's like, that's the thing. And that's what they will need to figure out very, very painfully as they run into these walls.
In the meantime, what's cool is with the fact that we have an open system, is that we can just buy their stuff and resell it.
Yeah. Like, I mean, that's what's happening with PaperQ and some other things.
Like, they're building very powerful tools.
Yeah.
Like, Google Search for a while was incredibly powerful. And, like, if you don't want to go in the friction, if you're not in their system, we have a system now where we can just buy it and resell it.
You can set it free. You can put it out of the box and set it free. That's, in some sense, that's what we are doing with our user-generated data. Like, if you, that's what we're doing. If you're a YouTuber and you have all your videos on YouTube, you can right now build a script, use a little download or whatever to download all your videos, sign them, upload them to Blossom, like, you can make them truly yours, and you can set them free. And it's the same thing about the agent stuff. It's exactly the same principle.
Same thing.
So that's, I think, where it's heading. But it's going to take a long time. Like, this is definitely not going to happen overnight, and it's going to take a lot of, you know, grinding away and engineering. It's like, to me, I mentioned this a couple of days ago, I think, it's very similar to back in the 90s where, like, Linux was basically still a joke in some sense, and Microsoft had like 99.9% market dominance or something ridiculous. It was like Microsoft was absolutely everything, and it was just a couple of nerds kind of chipping away at the problem and building all these little tools and building everything out in the GNU/Linux world. And look where we are now. You know, it's only a couple decades later.
They couldn't compete. It's just too much. Yeah. Too much. That's what excites me about, like, the DVMCP, is that we're already seeing some of it working.
Yeah.
I didn't expect it to work so quickly, but, like, the ability for... What excites me, and I want to look more into, is... Because it's interesting to configure your agents to be set up for certain tasks.
Yeah. Build your own specialists.
It's going to be interesting to see how far an agent can go, starting from a blank slate, and just building itself with its own capabilities. Because a lot of the Nostra discovery, when it can go out and browse Nostra and make decisions on Web of Trust, what can be trusted, what can't be trusted, you give it a perspective like that. It could start from a blank slate, and you give it a task, and it could just pull in other tools, maybe in the future other agents, to complete the task, and then shut down.
Yeah.
And reset.
To me, what's magical is the life component of it. It's like you're working on something and it doesn't work because it's just, it's very new. It's a new library. It's a new thing, whatever. And then someone publishes a snippet.
Yep.
And your system can automatically, will automatically pick it up and then it works. It's like, you know, someone just released a library or a way of doing things and so on, and your agent is confused, like, oh, I don't know how to use this thing. Mm-hmm. And then he publishes almost like a little tutorial for the agent, which is very easy to do. That's the idea of the code snippets.
Yep. Yeah.
And then it magically works. That's so mind-blowing. That works already. Like, that's what we tried to show off yesterday.
Well, you see,
I'm not sure if we managed yet, but it's, like, it's very hard to explain all this.
We might have. But you see it in playing out in the slower sense, like the existing developer world. Like, whenever someone comes out with a new UI framework, like the newest, hottest thing, it takes a while for people to pick it up because what they're waiting for is the first developers to start writing blog posts about it, to start explaining.
Yeah, you have to understand it first.
Tutorial, and give instructions to the people who come next.
Yeah,
and that's kind of what. Yeah. Now we're just going to try to do that with AI. Like, just give it instructions and.
Yeah, I mean, that's what vibe coding fixes. You don't have to understand what it's doing or what kind of code it produces. You just, it just works and it looks great, fantastic. Do you think that's going to be an issue down the line? I follow some, like, really, really good coders, and they all basically talk about how using these tools. Let me give an example. It's like, you know, you had all these taxi drivers in New York, and they knew the city in and out, inside out. And then GPS came along, and... you outsource that part of your brain that understands the traffic flows of the city, that understands, like, even like where stuff is and so on. And now all of that has gone out the window. Like, you know, like, I don't know how many decades in after GPS now, but it's like most taxi drivers of the world don't understand this stuff anymore and just, like, do whatever the GPS tells them to. And they don't have a deep understanding of how the city works, where to drive, what the best routes are and so on. And so the people I follow, their main criticism is that you outsource so many decisions and don't really, you even outsource understanding in some sense. Like, you don't even understand yourself anymore what the code base is doing. And this will lead to the kind of terrible results down the line.
Well, you definitely limit how much, like, you outsource your understanding, you outsource some of your ability, and then you probably lose it. So you probably become, by like any human measurable terms, a worse coder. But like whether that produces bad, I mean, that's a bad outcome for yourself because now you're doing stuff that you don't quite understand, you're relying on the AI. But I don't know if it produces a bad outcome for the industry.
The software itself?
Yeah, the software itself or the industry, because I think it's just, it might split into two type categories of, it might split into what we see right now, kind of in some sense, like the Linux kernels and the foundational software, the low-level stuff is...
written by wizards.
Yeah, written by wizards. And then a lot of the other stuff is just like the JavaScript websites, all the crappy
already
apps
kind of vibe together with copy-paste from Stack Overflow.
Yeah, the copy-paste, half work. Yeah. And so I think there's always a level... it probably going to end up like that, where there's... the low-level stuff that the AI ends up using is curated, made with intention, and then everything on top is just kind of regenerated, retried, try again, until someone gets something that looks right.
Yeah, fair enough. I think that's an interesting perspective.
But you see it with, like, it's just on a slower time scale, I think. You see it with, like, open source.
Yeah.
Like, everything gets
forked. Your point is that's already happening.
Something gets forked, a developer goes away, or someone forks it, and it's like, let me rewrite the UI now because it doesn't look right.
Yeah.
Let me update it from jQuery to something else. And you're just redoing work that someone else did, and now it's just become bad work.
Yeah, fair enough.
I'm
not sure how I think about this. I feel like it's kind of too early to tell. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's with the most surprising outcome for me was that LLMs, especially if you actually speak to them, not type to them or write to them, but speak to them, they make excellent rubber duck debuggers, excellent kind of brainstorming partners. It's
like,
really interesting. I would have never expected that.
The output side is, it's still kind of up in the air. We don't really know how much it's capable on the output side, but the input side, the fact that we managed to make something that can appears to understand like human language.
Yeah.
Like that is something.
It's absolutely
that's, like,
amazing. And
that's like that's a massive leap forward. Because I remember working with some of the, like the early like AI, you know, like Siri on the original Siri version on the iPhone. And all the AI systems that were released after
That's very, very new stuff. I worked with Dragon Naturally Speaking, which was basically you had to train it yourself by speaking like a book of text into the microphone for like a week so that it understands your voice and
but like,
how
even,
you say
even
things.
When it, even when it managed to convert the... Even when we managed to convert the audio to text, because we had that for a while.
It worked for a while, yeah.
You could tell it was just running a bunch of if statements.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
It was like hard-coded to like certain tasks. And it
a lot of them are different beasts. Yeah.
Yeah, and somehow it's like that is, it fixed almost overnight.
Yeah.
Because that's what I'm excited as we get, like, I guess you could say the next generation of models when they release is the whole MCP, like the tool calling capabilities. When we start getting small models with that, the lightweight ones, then the ones that realistically can't reason very well or can't come up with like you can use them almost as like a fuzzy layer between like human language and calling API endpoints.
Yeah I mean I think that's what also in some sense as I watch people using all this stuff like extensively and I use it myself as well, it's like I see a lot of people, for example, and Justin talked about this as well, it's like okay, it's a fantastic interface between you and your terminal. Because you cannot remember, like the humans are very bad at remembering every single kind of flag of, you know, FFmpeg or Git or whatever command, you know? It's like, how, I know what I want to do, but I can't do the mapping myself of what I want to do to exactly the, what are the right brackets and the right flags and the right whatever.
That's what I mean by like, it's like it's a human interface for calling tools for things.
Yeah, it's really good at that.
Remember.
Yeah.
And like, that's the, I'm excited to get home and start like building some hardware and putting some experiments together for this because like that is the piece that was missing in like home assistant style AI.
Oh, okay. So
like, turn on my light.
Yeah.
It's like, it doesn't know which light.
Yeah.
It, the if statement can't tell.
And now you can do it locally.
Well, if you
now you can do it without inviting all the spies into your living room.
Yeah. So like,
room.
If you have two components in like a smart home, if you have a user location, which can be detected like which room. By like motion or something, and then you have a light bulb. Previously, you'd have to write an if statement saying, "Look for a light bulb that's in the user location if they say this command." Now, the AI can just kind of, for lack of a better word, just like fuzz it, just kind of.
Yeah. It will figure it out on
its
own.
It'll figure it out.
Yeah. It will figure out what you mean. That's what's so
like,
fascinating. Yeah.
It's gonna fail. But it's like the 90% solution that actually works.
Exactly. It doesn't matter that it's like, I've just been working with a junior engineer to kind of basically use an LLM for like a summarization task, those kind of things. And he was like, he was like, I think I got it working and so on. But it's like it produces a different output every time I want to fix that and so on.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, well, that's the whole point. Like you don't try to fix it. Like that's going to happen with LLMs. Always, and that's the point. That's why they are so good.
That's why they work.
That's why they work.
They work for problems.
They're not if statements.
There's problems that are like extremely complicated, like parsing a command out of human speech. That they work for 90% of the time.
Yeah.
Which is,
and that's the difference between natural language and computer language.
Yes.
Because natural language is always it always leaves this wiggle room for interpretation. That's why it's so hard to do, and you have to you need the context.
Yeah.
To get the interpretation right. And so it is always, it will never be 100%. Never. Like only computer language and math can do that, basically. And that's the main difference. And so what we have now is a great translation layer, basically, because what LLMs obviously are good at is actually they can read the whole man page of FFmpeg. And they usually are not going to make a mistake with like the bracket is in the wrong spot or whatever, you know, like those kind of things.
That's an interesting point. Yeah.
It's the whole point of natural language is that it is fuzzy.
Yeah.
It is, and it has to be because the world is fuzzy. The future is uncertain and you can't have perfect knowledge of the world and all those kind of things. You're just like one. You are part of the universe and the world. It's impossible for you to have a perfect
picture.
It's
another bit of entropy we managed to add to the computer. Like, you needed that entropy in the system for it to be able to act like something that's in the real world.
I think it's a necessary part to have a proper interface between humans and computers in some sense.
Yeah.
It is the Star Trek kind of you just talk to the computer kind of thing. Should we do one more round of the like before we hit like the waterfalls and the waves?
Yeah.
But yeah, that's how I see it. It's like to me it's always important to really get a hands-on feeling for this stuff and really play around with it for a long time, because most people, I think, they don't understand. I mean, who understands these things? You know, it's like quantum mechanics. It's like, you know, who truly understands this stuff? But like even the engineers building the LLMs, they're all black boxes. No one understands how they actually reason, how they work. We're very bad at inspecting them. We're very bad at figuring out actually like what they do inside, basically.
That was my initial thought about AI way back when, long time ago, of course, when it came out. But was like, I thought that they would be more useful once we understood them more. But the fact that like it's the fuzziness of it that actually makes it useful, it's they almost work better when we specialize them. There's people who understand them, how they work. And they're probably not very complicated, but it's, you know, how it actually produces the outcome it produces is,
but I would disagree that there's people that understand how they work. It's very much like, okay, physicists understand in a perfect scenario how particles behave. Physicist understands the weather of the Earth.
That's what I mean.
You know what I mean? It's too complex. It's too big.
Yeah.
You can't understand it. And you can't even build systems that help you understand it because it's just too much. You'll run into combinatorial explosion and basically the computer that's trying to compute it is going to collapse into a black hole.
You don't have enough context.
Too many states.
Yeah.
And so on. And it's also, I also don't think that, right now, like, I don't understand how you work. I don't understand how you think, you know? Like, I don't understand how my team works. I don't understand how, whatever. Even my wife works, you know?
That's an interesting...
I don't want to call my wife useful, you know? Like, that's not what I mean. That's not what I was trying to say at all. But you still find ways to work together. And you still, you know, are able to divvy up tasks.
You find a common interface.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and you don't have to understand the other completely to,
it's the common interface. Like you said, that's what language is. It's a fuzzy enough common interface that I can say something and 90% of the time you'll understand what I'm saying.
With a lot of work. I mean, we have to learn the same language and so on.
It's
the same context.
It's incredibly inefficient because I have to process my thoughts, which are...
Yeah.
You know,
you have to turn what's in your head into words.
Yeah.
And
that's a compression algorithm.
It's very bad.
It's expensive. Yeah, it's an expensive algorithm, but it's the only way we found to transfer anything. If I transfer my thoughts to you, they would be completely incompatible.
It's probably going to, you know, my brain would probably melt.
It's two incompatible systems. It's like one computer system trying to transfer, you know, its database to another.
Yeah.
It's like, if the databases line up perfectly. If they're genetic copies of each other, you can transfer the data.
Yeah.
You can't even move data from a WordPress website to a WordPress website.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Because like almost like genetically different.
Yeah. Everyone has a different SQL version or something, and it's just everything breaks.
Yeah. And so like you need this come with this like processed export language.
So the matrix like I know Kung Fu download is a lie that will never work.
Probably. Although there's a lot of stuff that the Matrix has that aren't lies, that isn't a lie.
Ah, Matrix is great. It's basically, you know, it's Plato's cave just for the new.
I only recently I watched it with a bunch of friends at the Bitcoin halving.
You never saw it before?
Not in its not entirety.
Okay, interesting.
So there's kind of I knew the story and I'd seen clips of it, but I watched it like front to back, and that was.
It's a great movie. It's one of the best movies. I love it now, of my time.
There's so much. I have never seen a movie with so much, in the context of computers. I've never seen something that has so much symbolism.
Yeah.
Like there's almost every scene. There's something that relates to computers or social media or something that you're seeing play out right now.
And it came out in 1999, which is insane. 99 is when it came out. So it was filmed 97, 98 and so on.
Wow.
No, it's a, massive culturally important movie and like a classic now for a reason, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I mean, it just shows also the age difference between us. It's like, for me, it's like, I. Oh, yeah, right, okay. It's like, yeah, there's people that haven't seen Matrix, they're too young.
I find that. There's like, I have a backlog of movies that people tell me, and like, everyone, like, have you seen this? Like, it's like a classic movie or something.
Yeah.
And like, I try to just remember, and then they say the release date, and I'm like, oh, yeah, I haven't seen that because it came out before I was born.
But I'm in the same situation, and I try to work through the backlog, and I would say like 50% through or so, but it's like, I'm in the same situation, which is people that are 10, 20, 30 years older than me. They will mention like, you know, Soylent Green or something, or like sci-fi movies.
That is a movie I have seen.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Yeah, it's fantastic. Yeah. Soylent Green is made of people. No, it's great. And like all, you know, Space Odyssey and all that. I just very recently watched Close Encounters of the Third Kind and like all these classic science fiction movies. I still have to watch. It's one with Keanu Reeves that I haven't seen yet. It was because it goes around an Oscar from time to time. Johnny Mnemonic.
I've never heard of that.
And I just really want to watch it because it has the word mnemonic in it, like mnemonic seed phrase.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's about a data. Like he basically he stores data in his brain, like very apropos to what we were talking about. Oh, and he's like a data courier, and the data is somehow important and almost fries his brain or something.
Why are the stories back then so interesting?
Yeah, I mean, why it was interesting times when computer and computing and this stuff came around. It was very interesting times. Now it's kind of embedded in society and so on. But the internet really was a very new world and a very foreign thing, you know, like the information superhighway, and no one understood it at all. I think we're in a similar spot now.
Yeah,
especially with LLMs, like. It's a similar shift.
Do you think, so the two things we're seeing right now, like the kind of Nostr starting up, the concept of cryptographic key pairs as identities, and then the AI and large language models becoming a thing. Because both of those things, like...
Yeah, it's happening at the same time.
It's a very interesting coincidence because Nostr.
I don't believe in coincidences.
Well, could they be related in any way? Because the large language models are systematically destroying the centralized providers because they can't do anything against spam.
Yeah.
Because their systems are set up to block spam from a computer that has always a recognizable pattern. But the spam when one person runs like 10 Instagram accounts. Is that it can't detect that as spam anymore.
Spam detection is also not something you can perfectly solve. Like one man's trash is another man's treasure, you know? Like,
that's the problem. Yeah. But this is happening at the same time that we have a growing solution for cryptographic identity. So it's like it's pushing on one side. It's interesting. It's a coincidence that makes me wonder.
What
it's
like a coincidence.
It's happening at the same time.
I think it was Applebaum or was it Assange? I'm not sure, but he said like for some reason the universe smiles on encryption. Like it doesn't have to work this way, but it does work this way that encryption, cryptography itself gives, like it moves all the power to the individual. And it's a very peculiar thing because there's no reason why the universe should work in that way or has to work in that way. But it's basically like the US, China and Russia can conspire against you. If you use strong cryptography, there's nothing they can do.
Yeah, yeah.
Like it's to access, strange. To open the box, to access the data. And now in the, you know, AI, LLM world and all those kind of things, it's like the Skynet being the most probable outcome, like the Terminator style Skynet. Have you seen Terminator? The original Terminator with Arnold Schwarzenegger? Okay.
Yes.
Where robots take over the world, everyone dies and so on. It's really bad. I think it's very unlikely. Unlikely outcome because... the closed system can't compete.
Yes.
Somehow the universe smiles on open source software and open data and cryptographically signed and verified data, which is out in the open.
Yeah.
It does not smile, like in this scenario, the universe does not smile upon silos, you know, and siloed systems and siloed software and so on. It's very much like, it's Pablo and I, we talked about this a little bit, but it's like, there's a reason why totalitarian
silos,
societies and
silos can't deal with compounding errors.
And you need outside force to prop up the silo.
Yeah, yeah.
And so a jungle or like a market style system, like a marketplace, an open market, which is jungle-like system, doesn't need an outside force.
Yeah.
So if you have an open self-stabilizing system, it's always superior to a closed, it has to be enforced from the outside system, because you need energy. You need energy from the outside to stabilize the system, basically.
Yeah, you need the,
that's the general principle.
Yeah.
So you, and this upkeep and this applying force on it and so on has a cost. And so it will bankrupt you on a long enough time frame in some sense.
Yeah, it's
that's how I see it, at least. You know, like maybe I'm also full of shit, but it's like history kind of shows.
There's something fundamental there, because I think if you look at a lot of systems, if you look at nature and whatnot, for a surface level understanding, like successful outcomes continue whatever is happening. Errors compound.
Yeah,
and that seems to be a fundamental thing where in every system, you see it a lot in computer systems, where the successful operation of a task will just produce the outcome. But if you introduce 1% error, it can't correct. Like, there's very few styles of systems that have error correction.
Yeah.
And the reason it's so necessary is because 1%, then 1 more percent, then 1 more percent, and 1 more percent. And whereas successes don't correct in the opposite direction in almost all cases. So like the good example of this is like everyone has like their parents or their friend's computer, and you try to explain to them why it's going slow. Like, you know, we probably know why it's slow. It's like too much is installed, there's too much extensions, there's a program running, 100 programs running in the background. But like, it's so many little 1% errors that like all compound, and the system doesn't have any way of correcting that, because it's just one more little thing running, one more little, and so it just naturally basically falls apart and becomes slow.
That's an interesting point. It's like I talked about this a bunch in the Bitcoin context, also in the Nostr context. The reason why signing data sets the data free is because computers are insanely good at creating perfect copies.
Yeah.
So. And DNA is also good at that. That's the other system that's really good at that. Mm. But DNA makes certain mistakes. That's why we have mutations and so on. Like, not all mistakes are catastrophic. Some are beneficial. But the thing about binary encoding and about computers is they're perfect copying machines. And because we have perfect copying machines, well, look at that.
Transporting something.
Well, like helicopters and everything.
I wonder what they're moving.
Oh, that's probably like something's burning, because that's a big bucket of water.
It's like empty though.
Yeah, probably.
There's no way a bucket of water flies behind a helicopter.
Yeah, that's true. Well, hopefully it's just like a little exercise drill or whatever. But the thing about being able to copy something perfectly is like it has very interesting side effects. So. You can't create perfect copies in the real world. You just can't. Mm-hmm. It's like, it doesn't matter if you look at cloning, it doesn't matter if you're copying at artwork, it doesn't matter if you look at mass production, whatever, of like, you know, IKEA chairs, who cares? It's like, every little thing is gonna be a little bit different. Yeah. You only have error, like perfect copies, you only have in the digital world, where you're dealing with bits of information and you can run error correction algorithms and so on and so forth. And so the upside is, we can build systems like Bitcoin, we can build systems like Nostr, that kind of, you know, like, that are insanely resilient, because the same thing, exactly the same thing, is in multiple places at once, basically. Because you cannot differentiate between a JPEG, like two JPEGs that are exactly the same, have the same hash and everything. What's the original? You can't know.
Yeah, we've
right?
successfully, as far as information goes in that context, we've successfully solved the location problem.
Exactly, like, exactly. That's why I was about to say that next. That's why it becomes non-local. And that's why Bitcoin is non-local. And that's why Nostr stuff is non-local. That's why we are able to also, that's why cryptographic identities are non-local. That's why we can remove stuff from the servers.
Yeah.
That is what makes stuff non-local.
Yeah.
That's exactly it. That's exactly it. It is because...
You can guarantee a perfect copy. And therefore, not only... Yes. it ceases to become a copy in that other location.
It's not a copy anymore. It's the same thing.
It exists in both places now.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. That's where the non-locality comes in, which is really weird, right? We don't have this concept in the real world.
There's no parallel in the physical.
No, there's no parallel in the physical. I mean, only quantum stuff and so on. But again, let's not talk about that.
Yeah.
But my point is like, because of the perfect copies, that's what brings all these beautiful properties to the systems we care about, to Bitcoin, to Nostr, to Blossom as well. It's the same thing. It's the same principle. It's like, it's exactly the same file. We can guarantee it. And so which one is the original is a meaningless question.
It's
all the same thing. They're all the original.
Yeah.
For all it, like you cannot know in a truly distributed system. You literally cannot know. You absolutely cannot know. And so, where I was going with this is like the downside of that. The downside it relates to what you said, the fuzzing of the things and so on. Mm-hmm. It's like the downside of that, with the LLMs and all these things, is like you don't necessarily want to have perfect copies all the time. There's a reason why we forget things, for example.
Yes. you need...
It's very useful to forget things. Perfect memory would be a curse, not a blessing.
Yeah, you'd fill up too much. You'd have too much, because information becomes irrelevant. It's your context changes, your environment changes, and you need to get rid of things.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think that's also where open systems are superior, where you have a certain way of figuring out what's relevant now, what's kind of relevant in the channel based on, you know, your point of view, based on the most recent stuff that just happened and so on. And that's very hard to do in closed systems.
Well, because you have to make a decision of what to forget.
Exactly.
Which is energy.
Exactly.
Yeah, you can't, that's the important point.
The point is you cannot centrally control that. It has to be an organic, emerging thing.
You lose. It's a losing game, because if you have to spend energy to forget, then you've just doubled the amount of energy you need.
Forgetting needs to be effortless.
Which means you can't, every life form is optimized to get just as much energy as it needs. And if it needs extra and double energy just to make it
forgetting
forget,
and dying needs to be effortless.
Yes.
And it usually is.
Yeah.
But in a centrally controlled system, it isn't.
It's not. Yeah. You need to prune the database.
Exactly.
Which is a task you have to run. You have to do all these checks to make sure you're not forgetting something that's important.
Yeah.
And
And that's why I'm so bullish on Nostr as a substrate for all this stuff, because it happens organically. And
it naturally forgets. Yeah. The relays go down. Yeah.
Exactly.
Things get deleted.
If you don't care about data anymore, it's just like whatever, you know.
That is one of the... everyone loves bringing it up every time, but that is one of the reasons that IPFS and those style of systems couldn't work, is they strive to not forget anything.
Yeah. It had, IPFS was aiming for the curse of perfect knowledge.
Yeah. The curse of perfect knowledge. Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
Yeah, and they also tried to build a global state, and you know, they made some assumptions, which I think was very misguided. Like
they made a shitcoin.
Yeah, I mean, they launched a massive shitcoin. Good for them.
I was into IPF. I was watching and very interested in IPF.
I was very enthusiastic about it.
Before Filecoin came along. And they had, were building things. They were developing clients. Yeah. They were making new nodes. Shitcoin launched.
Yeah.
The amount of commits on the project dropped in half.
Yeah.
They stopped shipping.
Yeah.
And it was.
I mean, that's also the thing about money. It's not always a good thing. Like it oftentimes corrupts, and you know, like just throwing endless money at a problem doesn't necessarily always fix it, which is interesting, actually. Like it's you know, sometimes it even makes stuff worse. So that's a little, like, case in point, IPFS and quite a few other projects as well. But yeah, I mean, IPFS tried to. Like, it leaned heavily into deduplication, for example. That's why I love Blossom so much. Exactly. You need to, because then you need to fit the pieces together again. And that's like, all of that is computationally expensive, actually hard. If you're missing a shard, what do you do? Those kind of things.
Yeah.
And like the left side of the brain solution that is both, like, it's all, to me, it's all kind of left side of the brain, Bitcoin, Nostr, and Blossom as well, where it's just like, okay, we just have this file. We you know, like, that's the file. That's the hash. Well, that's it.
Kind of to the previous point of like using energy to forget, it's also like that's why Bitcoin got right, so fundamentally right, is it minimized the amount of energy needed to verify down to something, to almost nothing, measurable in the system. Because if you that's more energy that needs to be put into the system if you're spending more to verify.
You immediately see that that the new information you get is proper, is valid and proper. You only need to the block header basically.
It makes
it very, very cheap to figure out what to dismiss.
Yeah.
Very cheap. It's like almost free.
The main thing, it fixes the spam problem.
Yeah. And Bitcoin really has to figure it out, because Bitcoin is truly about building up something that doesn't forget forever. Mm-hmm. So you really have to get this part right.
It's interesting that that's necessary in some way.
Yeah.
One piece.
Yeah, those are fundamental things. And I briefly, and we spoke about this yesterday as well. I briefly spoke with Pablo about this. It's like there are these certain ways that the universe works, and you can't cheat that. And on the LLM side, for example, and it is about this stuff. It's like if you want to artificially build something, if something doesn't emerge organically, if you want to if you have a structure that needs upkeep, it sucks energy out of the whole system.
Yeah.
So on a long enough time scale, it will just fall and crumble.
Yeah.
Because you
Unless
can't
you have input.
Yeah, but you can't have endless energy input forever.
No.
So only things that organically emerge, that's the constant, basically, that's the thing that can always happen. Spontaneous order, like crystalline structures forming, whatever, what have you, those kind of things. On the kind of information processing side, what I think is so interesting, I mean, we went through the whole, how are computer languages different from natural languages, how is compute different from like thinking in some sense and so on. And now on the LLM side, that being a generalist and being a specialist are in tension with each other. You can't be both. And what I see emerging right now is like, the specialists still need to communicate. They still need to have a shared language where, of course, like the model context protocol comes in, DBMCP, all these things come in. But you need to provide the shared substrate for the marketplaces and for those for those kind of things. And to me, like, Nostr is absolutely perfect for that. And so I see Nostr as the breeding ground for specialists in some sense. Like, generalists will have as well. But in terms of housing and training specialist systems, specialist LLM, specialist agents, I think Nostr is perfect. I don't think as of right now we have a better substrate.
Yeah.
It's a bold claim, I realize, but I believe it's true.
I need to think about the whole concept of like training the agents, because that's everything I've only brushed up against them and like using them and trying to use them like specialized tasks. I have not seen what's possible with like training them in specialized ways. I know you can do it, but I wonder.
What would you want to? What kind of agent would you want to build, and what do you want to train it on?
I don't know yet. That's the thing.
Do you have a lot of personal data that you want to feed it? You want to build a LLM version of Hazard?
Well, see, I think like a database use case is the only use case I can think of, like a specialized system. But that's because we've had them forever. We've had like SQL databases. We've had those for a long time, and those are like a server that's been trained to retrieve data and sort it and stuff like that. Which the LLM, we're seeing that with like RAG databases and various other stuff that I haven't looked into yet. It's really good at like data retrieval.
So you would like to have a second brain, in some sense?
Definitely, that's what I'm gonna try to build. But I wonder if there's like other use cases that we just haven't that aren't possible because they can't be built in a perfect way that the computers require. Because like data retrieval is, data archiving and data retrieval, if you put enough effort into it, is a solved problem. You can get it 100% right.
Yeah.
But there's, what if there's other systems like specialized systems, the concept of like training an AI that we can't do right now because we can't get them 100% right. I don't know.
So is this going to be one of your next side projects? Get home, buy a bunch of graphics cards.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to see what I can run with the hardware I have now. And
It's amazing what you can run. Like I keep being blown away, but like, you know, my old ThinkPad can run OLAMA with Llama 2, and it's very useful.
Yeah.
It's like completely local, open source model.
That's the beauty of, that's what I was waiting for, to get jump into AI, was to see that like something running locally can't make decisions. It can't run a whole pipeline, and you can't. It's pretty dumb when you interact with it.
Yeah.
But for like doing tasks,
it's smart enough to be useful.
Yeah,
that's kind of an interesting threshold to cross.
Yes, because it definitely wasn't that way a year ago.
Yeah,
I from what I tested, it was slow. Didn't understand a single thing.
Yeah.
Barely understood English. And now it's like to the point of being useful, and it's improving.
Yeah. I think that the running is like the local part is absolutely key, because on the especially on the Nostr side, like we discussed this at length the last couple of weeks, but it's like the beauty of Nostr, the beauty of all these systems is that you don't need an API key ever.
Well,
it's like and so in this world, like if you would only if I mean, yes, okay, there's these wrappers and so on, like PaperQ and so on. But in the best case, it's like this, all the stuff runs locally on your computer.
But to throw an idea that we had way back a little while ago was like, how else are you going to trust it?
Yes.
You can't see it's working. Like locally, I can see every piece working. If it's running on OpenAI servers, if it's running on someone else's servers, it becomes a trust me bro situation. Like,
yeah, you're not in charge. And the whole point of the world we're trying to build is to put the users in charge.
Yeah, but like if I'm going to build a personal assistant or something that's just going to voice commands, run stuff for me, do stuff, DM people for me, send emails. Like, unless I can absolutely see that the system is working and I can trust it almost completely, it will never work.
I mean, you can contain it yourself. Like, it can be just don't have access to the internet and be on your local network, you know? And you see everything that comes in and out.
Yeah, yeah. But, like, that's the important part. You see it. There's something there where, like, if you can see it working, you can trust it a lot more than like talking.
Oh yeah, of course, you trust it a lot more. The other way is like, you know, Siri or whatever has access to all your DMs, all your emails, all your whole phone, all your screen at all times, and all those kind of things. And of course, it's sending stuff to a server.
Oh yeah.
How can you trust it? It's impossible to trust it. You shouldn't trust it at all. Like, you shouldn't trust it by default.
Yeah, but
in the local first world, it's very different.
It doesn't let you adapt to it either, because if you say the wrong thing to Siri and it calls the wrong person, you don't know if it was Siri making a mistake or whether you said the wrong thing. But if you see
how it works,
then you can be
that's part of trust, is right?
Yes,
right? It's like if you can trust the thing, it won't betray you. But if you can't trust the thing and it betrays you, you don't even know what happened, kind of. You know what I mean? It's like...
it's the unknown kills it.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. No, but I'm still surprised that other communities didn't stumble into Nostr and found it useful enough to go kind of very hard on it. I talked with Pablo about this a couple of weeks ago. There's the local first community, for example, like, and the self-hosting community and so on, and lots of hacker communities and so on. Like, Nostr is kind of by design local first in some sense, you know? It's like you said with the community relays and so on.
Yeah,
you can run your own home relay, do everything there. You can use Nostr as the substrate, and it works beautifully. It's very, very useful for this kind of stuff. And I'm because there is all these people that have the same concerns, and they share the exact concern that you just mentioned with, like, I never want to send stuff to a server I don't control ever, and so on. And they are not, they didn't, I don't know, I don't know, like, maybe it's just time. Maybe it's just, like you mentioned, with new UI framework, and someone needs to write a blog post about it that other people understand, and so on. But it's, I'm still surprised that we don't have more influx from other people. I mean, Bitcoin doesn't help. It's like you go on Nostr and it's like all Bitcoin people talking Bitcoin stuff, and everyone hates Bitcoin.
I'm going to throw my follow list for the exact reason. I'm starting to agree with you. We'll see. Like, removing the character limit was a mistake, because the amount of philosophical posts that I have no interest in is growing.
Tweets should be short. That was the whole point.
Yeah.
It's like, we have to bring back the character limit. 210 characters, nothing more.
Yeah, yeah. Just think about, yeah, ideas, different ways of browsing. That's the beauty of Inosha, though, is like, if I want that back, I can just make it.
Yeah.
You just filter things out you don't want to see.
I mean, there is the, I think, there are some relays that only accept events that are 144 characters or shorter or something like that. Like, because I talked with Pablo about it, and he configured one of the relays like this, and some other people cloned it. So, you know, there are inklings of the revolution, but it's not... we're not even... There's not even dozens of us yet.
Yeah,
I think most people enjoy the long tweets and long, you know, Gnostic posts and so on. And again, like, I'm, you know, I'm a huge fan of blog posts and articles and so on, but it's a different thing. It's a different media type, in my mind. I think, like, tweets should be short. Whatever is in a feed should be short. I don't want to see a, like, 5,000-word essay in my feed. No, but you're laughing.
Know,
you're laughing,
sucks.
But that's what we built now.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what everyone built. It's like, it
it's
really
so
sucks.
Long.
Yeah, it's
so
completely
long.
Wrong.
Like, that's why I think of changing it, because I literally don't read anything. Like, if it's two paragraphs,
you're in a different mode. You're in a different mode. Like, if you're in a feed, you're in a browsing mode.
Yeah.
You're in a browsing and discovery mode. If I find an article and it's posted by someone that I trust with their opinion on long form stuff, you know, like this person only shares interesting stuff, I am gonna put it into my, I'm gonna read this later pile. And when I'm in a reading mode, then I'm gonna read it. And I have my apps and my things and my lists and so on that I go through.
But you mentioned, like, scrolling down, like the large amounts of text is, to put it in modern terms, it's like dumping a large, it's just expensive. It's like putting a large amount of input into an LLM. Like, the amount of, just the cost and the processing power to reduce that down and understand it.
It's a DDoS on your attention, basically.
Yeah.
It was a big mistake. I'm glad you're converting. You know, it's like, if I have to convert every single client developer one by one, I'm gonna do that.
But we can't enforce it, for sure. I mean, that's what the clients do. Like, they hide, like, the read more by now. If it's too long, you have read more.
Yeah.
But then that doesn't really even fix the problem, because it fixes the problem with the scrolling. But then the person who's making that article never gets any engagement, because the first sentence that everyone reads doesn't convey any meaning.
And if it would ever catch on, then people would game it and would make the first sentence really, like, you know, like clickbait, basically.
Yeah, clickbait. Yeah. Video header, titles, all that stuff like that.
So, tweets were perfect. It's like... I never used them, so
I don't know.
Everyone fucked everything up, man. It's like, because the downfall was that Twitter removed the character limit. Like, they made it twice as long, and then they removed it completely.
Oh.
And,
it was always the same.
No. No, it was, I think it was 140 or something at first, and then 280, I think. And then they removed it completely and so on. And it's like, it wasn't an issue. Like, I really think it wasn't an issue.
Well, that's where the whole concept of threads came out of, if I'm not mistaken, because you had to make your first post compelling to the point, almost like a title, and then you would go on more.
And I think threads, I still think, I have this long thing on threads. I don't I went on and on about this for many months. I kind of stopped, gave up a little bit. But threads were ingenious, because you could link them together. You could still, it was kind of like a read more thing, right?
Yeah.
But also, like, you could react to every single paragraph, almost, like, to every single you in a tweet, you could fit two sentences, maybe, you know?
Yeah.
And so you could also kind of see what people found most interesting in this, like, little wall of text, in the thread, you know? And it was very good. It was very, very useful.
Interesting thing.
And
it
grew organically. That's the thing. Like, it grew like this over time, and it all had its use. And now all of that is destroyed, basically.
In some way, like media, and in the way they do, like the highlighter idea, like the highlighting, kind of recaptures that, because you can visualize what points do people talk about, highlight, share, and stuff like that.
And threads was a very organic thing around that. Because there was some banger statement, and that was, like, reposted and everything, and, like, lots of reactions to it and so on.
I want to, one of these days, I want to write some sort of client-like highlight, highlighter, because the idea is still good. It's just another app in my backlog where it's like, I want to see it work.
Justin is hopefully gonna build out his Rust multi-platform, and then, you know, we can just like one-shot native apps that do exactly that. That would be my goal.
That's an interesting point with AI and whatnot, is the people who, like the Rust multi-platform idea, the people who build like foundational systems, they usually, I kind of consider myself in this category too, because I get so distracted by building a beautiful library, a beautiful toolbox, that I never actually go build anything afterwards. But when I do, it's not as much as I should. It's like, maybe the equivalent would be like someone who designs an amazing workshop, and they just enjoy designing the workshop so much that they forget to build anything else. But the AI, having the...
setting up your development environment for like, well, 2 months and never writing a line of code.
Yeah, but that's the best, like the one-shotting, like the vibe coding idea is interesting, because we've kind of, that like does two things. It almost standardizes work. It makes it less important whether it's your workshop or someone else's. And then it lowers the amount of effort it takes to just use it. So like,
yeah,
it's like Rust multi-platform. He could build it out to be like an amazing app framework. And then he doesn't even have to build any apps for it. If it just, I could come along and just prompt an app into existence and use the foundation that he laid.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, in some sense, and Pablo made this point also, in some sense, that's what high-level programming languages are. I mean, everything, you know, boils down to assembler and binary after that, you know? And it's like everything else on top is scaffolding for us to have an easier time.
I think that's what we were talking about earlier with like, will AI and vibe coding mess stuff up? And I don't think it will because of that reason, because we'll still have to build really good, solid foundations.
Yeah.
And then the process of like using those workshops, using those foundations is always going to be like almost generative. Like build a chair and it's done. It's not perfect. It's good enough. Build another. Like, this actually brings up another interesting point that I was talking to. Us, like, software engineers, there's a weird tendency, it might be from the computer, to think of stuff we build as global solutions. And, like, don't think of, most of the time when we're talking about apps we build or tools we make.
Yeah, that's the current paradigm. Millions of users.
Yeah, we never think of, like, a bespoke solution. Like, if you think of the traditional, this might be due to the fact that, like, you mentioned, like, perfect copies and all that, but... you can't, like, you don't have the traditional sense of like a woodworking shop, like you make one chair.
Yeah.
You might make them all look like each other.
Yeah.
Or try to.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think we will have more of that. Very specialized, highly opinionated stuff, just because it's easier to build. And if just like 3 dozen people use it, that's fine.
Well, you see it with websites all the time.
Yeah.
Well, like the original websites, like they were all bespoke. Yeah. They were all just as much as was needed to have a website for that person.
Yeah.
And then for the last 5 years, we've been trying to solve like website building with like extremely generic frameworks.
Yeah, I would even say like 15 years or so.
And like before I was in web development.
Yeah.
And it just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
But the like
The ultimate outcome of this is like the Facebook page, where it's just everything looks the same.
Yes.
Yeah. And you set the profile picture and so
on.
You
just kind of configure a few things in the massive system.
Yeah.
But that's one thing I'm looking forward to a lot with AI models, is the ability to build those like one-off websites that are just as big as they need to be.
And also one-off apps and just one-off whatever in some sense. Well, I've been doing that a lot. I've built a lot of kind of little scripts and little things I would have never sat down and built otherwise.
I'm looking forward to it for like friends and whatnot, because you always have friends who ask you to build apps, build websites, and all that.
Now you can. You can charge them.
Oh, yeah, true. But the fun part is like...
They don't know yet.
Well, it still takes expertise. But just like the fact that I could build a... Because it used to take a lot of work to make a little web app, website that was just what was needed without using a framework. Because it's easier with frameworks speed people up. But now you can do it. Generate a single page of HTML, looks how you want, ship it, done.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. I mean, I liked your insight about kind of we're already in this situation with, you know, the wizards working on whether it's the Unix kernel or Bitcoin Core or what have you, you know, like you really need to know what you're doing. You need to understand the whole thing. You're not just, you know, like copy pasting a couple lines of JavaScript from Stack Overflow and so on. And that's a very interesting perspective of kind of we're already in this world. It's just
you've seen it with
multiplied now.
You've seen it in the JavaScript ecosystem for as much as it changes for a while. Like early days, it was everyone had to build their own framework. It was kind of hard. And then the engineers who really thought through things, who React came around, they were really intentioned about building a foundational level for a UI framework.
Yeah.
And then after everything, then we just kind of shifted layers now. Now we don't write, a lot of apps don't write pure JavaScript anymore. They write on top of a framework.
Yeah. I think it's a safe prediction to make that we will have frameworks for LLMs just like that.
There'll be
languages, and that's what's already being built now. And that's also what we are trying to build on another side with DBMCP and some of the things that Pablo built with the code snippets and kind of having it basically have a very tight integration of your IDE, of the agents it has access to, of the MCP tools that you grab from Nostr, and infusing it with kind of your point of view, which means also your web of trust. It's like, because I'm, you know, if Pablo publishes and signs something, I'm gonna grab it and like let it run wild on my system. Like I don't care. That's enough trust for me. I have a dedicated Vibe computer, so it's fine if it implodes. You know, I don't trust Pablo completely, but you get what I mean. You know, and that's what we are trying to build out. And I think we'll have a myriad of those kind of. Let's call this a framework. It is kind of a framework of how to work with LLMs in some sense. And the goal on our side is to build more freedom tech. The goal for us is to, you know, one shot Nostr clients, one shot. I mean, one guy basically Vibe coded a very sophisticated Bitcoin wallet, you know, where it's like, okay, it uses Bitcoin script and everything. It's like, I'm never going to use it and trust it, but you can do that too.
Yeah.
And we saw, you know, Kelly and some other people like, you know, Vibe code cashew clients and all those kind of things. So that's what we are aiming at, where it's just like, we want to give agents the tools and the understanding, like how to do this right. And then they're never going to make these sets of mistakes again. They're just going to be able to one-shot it. Like that's how you do. That's how you fetch data from relays. That's how you build a feed. That's
cool
how you get a
is,
profile.
The cool thing is, there's a chance this time, because we've been optimizing that for a while on the existing internet. Like, this is how you make API requests. This is how you search Google. So, but, like, the cool part is with now that we're shifting to cryptographic identities, because those systems never work because every 5 years we'd have to rebuild them.
Yes.
But with the cryptographic identities, there's probably not going to be a second, like, you're not going to have to rebuild it. It's just going to keep working. Like it.
How so? What's the main difference?
The permission's gone. Like at the core of it, that's what it is. Like,
it doesn't go away. The API or the thing doesn't go away.
Yeah.
Yes, that's
like,
a good,
like for example,
point.
Like if you wanted to search the internet back in the, it was you learned how to make your program interact with Google.
Alta Vista doesn't exist anymore. It was the search engine before Google.
I don't know that.
The Google API endpoint will go away.
But my exact point,
and
if you built any software in the early days for that earlier search engine, Google came along, now your software doesn't work anymore.
And that's also why the Unix tools don't go away, because they are local first.
Yes, they don't break, and they never go away.
They don't break because of an external dependency. And what we are trying to do is remove all external dependencies. It doesn't mean that everything has to work on your local machine, but you don't want to have external dependencies. That's the idea about moving from a server is an external dependency. A relay is not.
Yes. Yeah.
That's the difference. That's the thing that the Podcasting 2.0 people didn't get, for example. That's a crucial difference. A server truly is an external dependency. You only have one. You have one source of truth. Mm-hmm. It has power over you. A relay is not an external dependency. Because it literally can be an internal thing. I have a relay on my phone. I have a relay at home and so on. I can run the relay and it's completely interchangeable, but I don't have to trust it. That's why it's not an external dependency.
Commoditized.
And that's a crucial difference. And what we want to build out now, like with also agents and DBMCP and so on, like a DVM, for example, it's the same thing. It's a DBM is not an API. It's not an external dependency.
No.
It's a different thing. It's a different set of things.
It's because there can be multiple in some sense.
Yeah.
Like they don't have to be built to work like each other. They all work the same way, so they're just interchangeable.
It's just like a vendor on a large marketplace is not an external dependency in that sense. It's like because you can't go to someone else. A restaurant is not an mm-hmm. external dependency. You're not going to starve to death if it closes. You can go to the next one.
That's.
It's the same principle.
But if all the restaurants operated on subscription models, they'd be very inconvenient. Because now you have to go, you've lost your credits with the first one.
If you completely rely on Uber
with
Eats,
the next one, yeah.
That's the difference.
The money is what lets you do it. The money lets what hop around between different dependencies.
Exactly.
If you had subscriptions, if you had like sign up to go to a restaurant, then it becomes a dependency.
That's why money truly is an asset and credit is a liability in that sense. It's like your credit line. If you have like you know like a gift card or whatever, it's like a gift card is not money. It's like it doesn't have the same purpose. It's like money proper money. You will always be able to go somewhere else and exchange it for what you need and so on. Like and that's the it's such a small difference, but it's so crucial, right?
It's always a small. It's like
it's
just
so
small
crucial.
Differences.
It's and it really helped me to think through that once more. Like when I heard you talk about like trying to explain why is Noster different and why is it? That's also why it's different from an RSS feed, for example, and those kind of things. Because the RSS feed, the data in the RSS feed is not signed. And the podcasting to know people, they run into this issue all the time.
Yeah.
Where someone will pirate something, and just exchange the value block, and then you send money to the wrong people. Like that's not something that easily happens on a Noster site.
Yeah, and that.
Because it really matters where the data lives, you know? Like you have a server and it's the source of truth. Your feed is the source of truth.
Yeah, and you can't...
And it's not the data itself that is the source of truth.
And you can't easily change that after the fact.
No.
It's like you almost need like a consensus level, like everyone to move to sign stuff now. Like it's hard to modify that.
Yeah.
that system for that.
That's why it's just going to take a long time. It's like, you know, moving people from systems like Twitter to Noster, from systems like YouTube to a Noster-based solution and those kind of things, it takes a long, long, long time. It's just like it took a long time for, you know, like Unix and the Unix tools to win over Windows. And then like a couple of decades later, Windows was forced to basically integrate Linux into the system. It's like, it's really funny.
It still doesn't work well now, but yeah, it does, yeah. What kind of systematic thing? Do you use the latest Windows?
No,
they're trying to go extinct with the amount of the way they're designed. The UI, there's so much ads. It doesn't work.
They have so ads like in the UI directly.
The buttons take like unless you have like a ridiculously fast computer, the buttons there's like a quarter second delay on every button.
Okay, it has to load the ads.
It's back to like Windows XP.
It queries the ad server first on button down. I mean that's probably what's happening. I haven't used Windows in a long, long, long time. I still have a very old. I don't even know what kind of Windows version it is, but I just unearthed my very old gaming PC just to run models on it, and it all works well enough. So I'm not touching it, I'm not upgrading it, and so.
Yeah, I only see it because like my friends have some Windows machines.
No, I'm not hating. You know, it's like whatever works. I did a lot of photography back in the day, and I kind of had to use a Windows machine for all that because. All the Linux stuff just wasn't there yet.
Yeah.
Now it's way better. Now you have like Darkroom and GIMP is also like that was back in the day when GIMP was not like one window but 27 different floating windows. It was interesting times.
I remember that.
So
it's like what we talked about in the beginning almost. It's like getting used to the things so quickly.
Yeah.
Like you just kind of
you forget
it's
where
such
we came
a weird,
from.
Yeah, and then you go back and it's like it's such a strange experience when like. I mean, you go back to like traditional login flows, the email, a lot of stuff, you still have to log in with email. And it's like, now you have to check your email and there's all this.
It feels antiquated, right? If you're used to the Noster stuff, it feels very antiquated.
I never expected to get used to it so fast.
Same for me. It's
changes
like,
quickly.
It's. I mean, for me, like paying my breakfast, lunch, and dinner using a Lightning wallet is a normal thing to do now. And I'm completely used to it. And it's like, I don't even think about it.
Yeah,
you know, and I sometimes use whatever, you know, Like if I run out of balance on one thing, then I will use my Nostr client to pay for my coffee and those kind of things, you know. And it's like it's a non-event for me, which is really interesting.
Yeah, and then you go back to the other system, and there's just things you've and also unlearned.
Nostr working, for example. Nostr is my, like, I only have Nostr. I don't have anything else anymore. So it's the only thing I basically look into and check and so on. Which is also really great because I use kind of, like, again, like I mentioned this many times in the past, I was really addicted to Twitter. and it's a way, like, it's a more healthy relationship with technology in some sense. Nostr allows me to have a way more healthy relationship with, like, a feed, with my friend network in some sense. It's for me, it's way better. And just it working and it being a normal thing, it's like it feels like yesterday where the only client was like Branle or whatever VHF called it, and like everything was broken and nothing worked, and like you had some CLI clients and everything was terrible and it was so weird and no one understood anything. It's like no one understood what this thing was. And
that was only what, 2 years ago?
Yeah, 3 years ago or so. That's something like that. And now it looks very snappy. It's very fast. We're like optimizing things left and right. I'm using it as one of my main wallets for everything, which is weird. Like I owe Pablo money or something or whatever. It's like for a coffee. It's like I'm just gonna sap the people, and it's just completely seamless. Like
the cool part is we haven't even gotten to the ideas of like really seamless yet, because a lot of the Lightning apps, a lot of the other stuff take like multiple clicks and you gotta click the right button somewhere in the corner to get it to do that one thing. And it's still
that would actually be a very nice natural language use case, like send Pablo $5 and it does a vertex lookup and it just zaps.
Well, that's what, like, that's what,
because that's really like, seamless. The sorry to interrupt, but in terms of the vibing stuff, for me the key unlock was actually speaking to the computer. And it's so, because I use it now for my notes and my to-dos and like and the things and so on, and I just speak into my phone and that's it. That's all I do. Everything else is taken care of by the computer.
That's what I'm so excited about the dumb models, because I don't need the model to think for me for the first use case. I need to build a powerful system that's my home assistant, and I need to just run natural language commands against it.
Yeah,
and like. There's so much you can do
with
that.
And one of them could be, I sent Pablo $5 for a coffee yesterday.
Yeah, DM
and
somebody something. Yeah. The original use case of Siri
was that already works. That's the amazing thing. Yeah. People don't know that this already works. With the stuff that you built, talk about this maybe a little bit more. What's it called? The bakery?
For lack of a better name. It was going to be a notional thing. That's why it's called bakery.
Great.
But I'm thinking now it's going to be its own thing. But it's meant to be kind of... The vague idea right now is kind of that, like a system that you run in one place that you then prompt with AI to do things. A powerful Nostr-focused tool for some sort of AI toolbox.
Yeah, you sent me a DM yesterday just by saying, send Gigi a DM and say GM or something like
well,
that.
Well, that's the cool thing. Is like the MCP and all that is like you plug... Again, back to like the foundation thing and the fuzzy code. Like the MCP is a really dumb developer clicking around and copying Stack Overflow. And I'm just providing a solid foundation of tools it can use.
This is how you do it. This is how you send a DM. This is how it works.
Yeah, like this is what you do. This is what you need. This is how you look up a person. This is who I trust about. This is how you ask me to sign something. And then...
Yeah, that's so cool because it's like you can do that. And again, like this already works.
Trust it completely.
And like you, Amber on your phone will pop up and you will just sign it here and there.
Yeah.
It's so cool. And just to reiterate the point, like the what I think is so cool, because once you have the natural language prompt working, the switch to audio is like a non-event.
But no, you can't, this was my point of view. You can't switch to audio without that insight into the system.
Yeah.
Because if I plugged OpenAI into like Telegram to DM my friends, right? There's no way I can know for 100% that I'm going to be able to verify that message before it sends.
Yeah.
But the fact that we have the keys, the fact that we have that last...
Yeah, you're in control. Step, you're completely
like,
in control.
I can completely control. Yeah. I can switch out the model for a different one every single day for a different flavor of message. Yeah. And I won't worry at all because I can see the message it wants to sign, and if I don't like it, I just don't let it do it.
Yeah.
It's complete trust.
And just to paint the picture, like, because that's my current workflow. It's like, I'll be out and about, and I'll be, you know, walking from one place to the other or whatever. And I remember, like, I either have an insight or I remember something I need to do. So I'll pop out my phone, and I'll speak into the phone for, like, 30 seconds. Oh, I just remembered I need to, you know, like, I don't know. I need to DM Hazard that we need to go on a walk or whatever, and for the exact time. And with that stuff, it's like it's exactly the same tool chain and everything, and it can actually send the DM.
Yeah.
And it can actually send the money. Again, like I just remembered I owe Pablo $5 for the coffee yesterday or whatever. And it can actually literally just pick that up, and on your phone will pop up with Amber, and it's like, okay, you want to sign this, which is the DM. We want to sign this, which sends the $5. And that's it. And you sign off on it, and that's it. And that's like, that truly is a very powerful virtual assistant in some sense. Really is.
It's cool is that the next, I want to experiment with this with a few more niche traps, but this is going to make it very obvious that we're lacking in the Noster signing software category.
Yeah.
Because now, like, so
Amber's
awesome.
Android only.
more than that, because Amber's awesome, but it signs everything. So it means it's too broad to show me exactly what it's doing. Even if it like shows a kind one that it wants to sign, I still can't quite see what it's doing. But if I could, what if I had 5 Amber apps on my phone and one was dedicated to only signing NIP60 wallet stuff? So all it was focused on was signing the events for me and for that, and it would show me the details about everything. Like, you want this transaction, it's probably going here, the money's coming out of here, and then another one that's just social. And having that, the smarter, like, we're going to need smarter sign. Like, it's going to be interesting.
I'll be trying to do something like that, right? In their extension with, like, let's be reasonable, I fully trust it, I'm paranoid, ask me every time, those kind of levels. Yeah. And the other thing is, like, I think it just has to be, like, a visual indication that, for example, you're sending money now. So you actually want to probably sign off on that and double check it. But I think we're on our way of figuring all that out. Like, we have the budgets and those kind of things, because like if it's like 20 cents, like you don't need
to
ask.
But it's more than like, the thing is, like, automation doesn't solve it.
And
until you need to solve the first problem you need to solve is understanding, and then you can automate it.
Yeah.
So you need a way for the user to see what they're signing, understand it within half a second.
Yeah.
Look at the screen and be like, this is a signature for a long form post.
Yeah.
And they're like, okay, I browsed through it. Okay, it looks good. Approve. Yeah. And then after that, you can say auto approve.
Yeah, and also exactly. And that's it relates to what you mentioned about the trust.
That's how you build
because
trust.
Because if you actually trust a thing, I'm gonna auto approve. And then it just needs to be transparent that you need to, like, I want to look back and I want to see what the thing spent in the last week or whatever and so on. It's like, and that's I think that's how it's gonna work. That's how it's gonna evolve. But I really like what kind of was cooked up in the last couple of weeks, because it all evolved so quickly. And now, and that's where we're at now. We actually have human language interfaces into Noster, into wallets, into like, we can SAP, we can do things, we can do all kinds of things.
We built in a month.
Yeah.
Where
it was built in a month.
OpenAI and they're still trying to get AI. You can't, unless you like sign up for like 5 subscriptions, you're not going to get you're not going to get your OpenAI model to send an email for you.
Now we just have to get better at explaining it. Showing it to other people. I think even people inside our little bubble will have trouble wrapping their head around it and what it really is and what it really means. But I'm really, really kind of optimistic, because
shipping examples is good for that.
We already have the marketplaces.
So
it's very much like in the beginning when Noster was like Fiatjob basically launched Noster. No one understood it and so on, but it was already live. And it's the same thing now. What we have is already live. And so you if someone publishes a code snippet, if someone publishes a DBMCP thing, whatever, it will pop up immediately and other people can pick it up. And you can immediately, instantly interact with all of it. And also on the bakery side and what you build and so on, it's like you literally can, you know, use one of your Sock Puppet accounts or whatever, or punch in your real answer, and you can just let it do stuff. And that's so magical, right? It's just like, post GM, and it will do it.
Yeah.
And you can literally talk into your computer and your phone and say like, post GM, and it will do the things. It's really cool.
It's going to be incredible for the, like I said, the prompting the commands is I don't know, like there's so much, we've been, like I said, it was the promise of, like when I grew up, it was like the promise of Siri came out.
Yeah.
And that was the promise. You're going to be able to do anything. You're not going to be like, it's not, they had a longer promise. You're like, you'll talk to your phone. But I was like, no, it was like,
for me, it was the Star Trek computer. That's like generational differences.
But like, but it just hasn't, it never came.
Yeah.
And now like, it's something about like.
Yeah, now it's here.
Systems are opened and now it's like, now it's here. It's actually, you can actually build it. You can do it. It will, it runs without, it works, which is crazy.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's really cool.
It actually works now.
All right, let's grab some coffee and see if we can work on explaining it to other people a little bit more. Maybe write a vibe a blog post into existence. Yeah, you need to write. You need to write one of the blog posts that you talked about in the, you know, JavaScript UI framework context. It's like you need to sit down, write about this, explain it to other people, explain it to our podcasting 2.0 friends, explain it to some of the other JavaScript front end developers and some tech people that should be interested in that stuff.
It's I want to write more for that for the same reason. Just like use Obsidian more, write more notes down, write more blog posts. Because they,
No, we'll get there.
It's good to get the information out.
We'll get there. All right. What do you say? Coffee? And an orange juice? Something like that? I'm cooked.
The sun's up now. It's going to be hot today.
All right. Let's hope that all this worked. It's always, with me, it's always a, you know, a gamble whether the recording actually worked or not. But that looks good.